of theory. And Stephen is going to tell us about our evaluation tools and how he's used them and the really astonishing work that he's done. But I think Stephen is a natural researcher in one way or another. So I
Do you
thought we.
sometimes feel you're being set up? No,
Quite probably, yes. No, but that's not, no, I'm not. It's true. It's true. I can remember when you came to the hospital, you said that you were interested in research.
yeah.
Now, I have a different relationship with research because as a doctor, I was always very scared about research. It was all done by people, by academics and clever people and this, that, and the other. And I never put myself in that category at all. But mostly by, actually, I think it was Roger Naber, who's an outstanding GP, is still and educator. I was on one of his courses, and he made the people on the course do a research project, and I sort of did one, and it came out rather well. So it wasn't at all what I expected, but the research project that I did was not something that I thought you would have to done, which would be peer reviewed, published in the medical press. It wasn't. It was a report and that, but it was a bit of research. So I think I'd like to ask Pierre and Sebastian and Bev, have you been involved in research or audit? I mean, audit is simply saying, what are we doing? Why are we doing it? Is it working? Could I do it better? So that's audit. So, you could be auditing yourself all the time. Research is perhaps something a little different. Research is a careful study or investigation to discover new facts or information. So a researcher takes a problem, asks a question, makes an intervention, and sees what happens, results of intervention, the outcome. So have you been involved in any a sort of quantifying or finding out or research? Any, not at all, no. Well, I hope that this introduction to research and audit will actually make you think that every time you teach someone, you can actually put that as part of audit or research, and you can collect stuff as you go along. It's being interested in finding out. And so having outcomes is very important. And Stephen's going to talk about that because it's outcomes that have to tell us whether some intervention has been working or not. So what I want to do is just go through the very basic research tools that we have, the language of research, the gold standard of research in the worldwide or across the UK is the randomized controlled trial. I'll say a little bit about that. There's the double blind trial, which makes the randomized controlled trial even stronger. There's a systematic review where you put papers together. There's a meta-analysis. There's audit. There's evidence-based medicine. And there's a thing that you probably may have heard of, the probability, which is P. There is a P thing associated with every piece of research that is not quantified, which is analyzed. The P stands for the probability. And it's the probability that what you did would have happened anyway. What you did would have happened anyway. And if that's the case, then the P number is high. In other words, it's highly likely that whatever you were doing, it would have happened anyway. So the lower the P value, the better and more valid is the research. So all of these things are about the validity of research. So just now, I know, Jane, you sent out these papers, didn't you? Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, they're only for reference, but they're like the other thing the other day, that they're a useful foundation for looking things up. So the research studies, and this is in the stuff that you had sent out, the research studies can be quantitative or qualitative. So a quantitative study is one that presents its results using numbers. How many did, how many didn't? Studies are called experimental if the investigators influence the way in which the interventions are administered. A randomized control trial is the most important type of experimental study, but this group also includes controlled clinical trials with methods other than randomizing. So RCTs have been placed at the evidence hierarchy, evidence-based medicine, and evidence-based medicine, I mean, it might be a familiar term to you now, but say going back to when I started in the middle of the last century, you didn't talk about evidence-based medicine. What you had then, before controlled studies started in the 40s, 50s, was that one consultant said that, oh, my intervention works better than yours, and this was accepted, but it was never controlled or any of the data or any of the outcomes. Since then, we have had the research studies which need controls and randomization, and which I'll speak about in a minute. And that has only happened in the last part of the last set of the previous century. So an evidence-based healthcare is what most things that you read is based on, is based on studies and research studies. So a qualitative study does not attempt to provide qualitative answers. Instead, the objective is to try to interpret events in their natural settings and to develop conceptual framework about social phenomena. So I won't go into so the emphasis is placed on the meanings, the experiences, and the views of participants. Methods include in-depth interviews, focus groups, participant observation, and examination of primary documents. Hypotheses are usually developed during or after the research rather than before. Now, that sort of study rings a bell when we're thinking about autogenic training, because I'm thinking about Levent Yüksekdil, who did the first PhD on autogenic training, which was qualitative, which was actually interviewing and finding out themes and things that cropped up from the interviews that he did. Well, I'll speak about that later on. So, just to go quickly through a randomized controlled trial. So the people who take part are called participants. I mean, this is very basic stuff, but as long as you, the more clear you are about the way that research is done, the better you'll be able to understand it. The people are called participants, or the study population or subjects. Participants don't necessarily have to be ill. The study be conducted on healthy volunteers or members of the general public. The people who design the study, administer the interventions, assess the result, and analyze them are called the investigators. The interventions include any clinical maneuver offered to the study population, including procedures such as preventative strategies, diagnostic tests, screening programs, active treatments, as in medication. So random allocation means that the participants, and here we get to the problems we've got with AT, the participants are randomized to that A group A or group B, but they're all taking, this is the easiest, they're all taking a pill that looks exactly the same. Pill A is active. Pill A is a placebo. Neither the investigator nor, no, that's a double blind trial. The Participants do not know whether they've got an active or a inactive pill because they both look the same. So that and they're randomized, so you don't know that that person did that and that person did that. And then when the outcome comes, if the investigator didn't know whether they were who had what, that makes it double blind, because not only were the participants blind, but the investigator was blind, and that is really at the top of the hierarchy of validity. So one of the things that you need to think about is confounding. So if I wanted to find out about a study population, it is what's the means the same as how equivalent the participants were, or how much they were not, and what ages they were, and what backgrounds they come from. So the more homogeneous you can have, the better. This is all takes account of the validity of the results. So we've got, if you actually start thinking about autogenic training, I mean, there are millions of results out there in scientific journals, in the Cochrane, this, I mean, everything. I mean, when you come to look up bibliography for your essays and things like that, you will find there is so much out there. There's not a lot of autogenic training. And when I was involved in peer reviewing some things, you can find out why. Because the studies that were put forward as research studies couldn't be compared, because on the whole, they did different things. And it was like comparing apples with pears. Some had, when they had the autogenic training, they had audio things that they listened to. Some people had didn't necessarily do the practice. So there were all sorts of different ways that autogenic training was actually delivered, which makes it impossible to have good validity. You can't compare with it, which is why there are so few randomized control or good control studies. There are some, and I've done one, actually good for me. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about how that came about, because actually that tells you the hoops that you would have to go to actually do a piece of accepted, peer-reviewed, published research on autogenic training. A lot of hoops to go through. So the other thing, which I think is very pertinent to the work that we do with autogenic training, is the anecdote, the story, and the narrative. Because really, when you're teaching your AT, you're getting a great deal of narrative, you're getting a story, and this is qualitative evidence. And when you come to give your questionnaires, your pre and post questionnaires to your clients, you can put in there questions that you would like to know about, which isn't just numerical or did you feel this? It's actually that person's experience. And so you begin to collate the responses. So the narrative is the telling of stories of events. And the narrative, we start with when we see a client, don't we? We actually hear their story, their narrative, and that is the begins, and that is enlarged and expanded upon throughout the training. So we have a great deal of qualitative and narrative and storytelling, which it all becomes part of the tools that we use for the outcomes that we have, and they can become quantitative as well as qualitative. So I think that when we look at the the measurement tools that we use, you'll see that they are both qualitative and quantitative, which makes them very interesting. But one of the difficulties that we have with autogenic training is the different things that people do in the name of autogenic training. And Jane, you know that perfectly well, don't you? Across the world, all sorts of things are done in the name of autogenic training, and the practice is different. And we are the only culture or the only country that does offloading exercises, so you can't compare what we do here with other things because they don't do what we do. So what we do is to actually quantify and qualify what we do here. What we did, what I have done, is this making sense? Because it's all, I just want you to give the actual basic ABC of research and move it into how we do it with autogenic training. Because with complementary medicine, usually the interventions in art, you do something, you give someone acupuncture, you give someone osteopathy, you give, so you're doing something, so you can't really, that person can't not know that they're doing it. So that means that research in complementary medicine has some special qualities and nuances about being able to compare someone having it with someone not having it. So does anybody want to ask anything at the moment, thinking about their own way of practice?
I think it's quite hard to get the big picture. So you carry on, I think. I think something will evolve that would I be
Yes, I
right
just
there?
wanted to set the
Yes.
scene of what there is in terms of research and audit, and then how we can engage in that. And I think the way that I can best explain that is I don't like talking about but what I did at the hospital, because I had to go, I'd show all the hoops I had to go through, and you see how it came out. That will explain a lot about what we do and what we can do. Because I think I mentioned yesterday about hypnotics and the Z drugs, and that I read an article in a journal to say that the Z drugs, which were an offshoot of the benzodiazepines, the Valiums and the Mogadons, actually did not live up to their name of they were very good, they were very safe, da-di-da-di-da, and of course they never are. The Z drugs were as bad as any other hypnotic. Some people had hangovers, some people were not fit to drive, etc., etc., etc. So they hadn't actually come up to their hype. And so I thought to myself, well, for heaven's sake, we teach autogenic training, and what happens in our class is Jane and Stephen and Donna and by the time we get to the third or even the second session, someone without being asked said, oh, this happened at night, I slept, or I had a dream like this, that. And people's nighttime sleep and dreaming are affected, altered quite early on. And then this doesn't become actually, oh gosh, how did you sleep last night? Are you getting any better? Not at all. You allow the people in the group to bring forth what they want to bring forth. And it may be that somebody who has insomnia doesn't want to speak about it. And it may be that somebody who hasn't mentioned insomnia, who hasn't had a good night's sleep because they've got pain, because they've got eczema and they itch all night, suddenly starts to sleep. So there are all these nuances about teaching people AT. And I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. We ought to have this done. So I thought what we could do at the hospital, because at the hospital we do BAS training and we have a lot of referrals. So I thought we would do a year of referrals for AT, not for insomnia, but for AT. And I would find a way of actually recording everything that happened and then look about writing it up. Now, I know you've got this paper because Jane, you sent it out, haven't you?
Well, I sent out everything you sent me, so
Have you sent out the insomnia paper?
yes, I think that was earlier. The insomnia, is that what you're talking about now?
It's called the Behavioral Approach to Insomnia Prospect Cohort Study.
There
Because
was one that I sent out very early on. I'm not sure if this
it's
went in.
probably, or it might have been the Edgware book, mightn't it?
Well, I'm sorry.
Anyway, have a look, and if you haven't got it, you really, it's better that you have it because you can see the stages. So, I began to collaborate with Professor Nicky Robinson, who was very interested in complementary medicine. And quite honestly, if I hadn't had her support, this would never have got off the ground. Because although I had the ideas, I had the numbers, I had the training, I had the this, that, and the other. I didn't have research, proper research, language, and ability. Is that it? AT as a behavioral approach.
That looks like it.
Yes, is it?
This is the NHS.
Can you read it to me? Because I don't think it. What's it say?
You're on mute, Pia.
Could you read it out? No, read it. I
Read.
can't.
It says the University College London Hospitals NHS Trust. The Royal London Homeopathic Hospital Autogenic Training and Non-Drug Approach to Anxiety, Panic Attacks and Insomnia.
No,
That's it.
that's the Edgware one, Jane. That's the one that you were involved in.
Yes.
That's not the one. This is one.
We were just sent, yeah?
That's the Edgware one.
Yes, those are the
Panic
ones.
attacks, anxiety, panic attacks, and insomnia. That's the one, the Edgware one. That was published, but that is not this one that I'm
Okay,
talking
you
about.
don't know.
Just describe it, Anne.
Okay.
Just describe what you
If
did.
I can
It's very.
say, I have sent this behavioral one out a long time ago.
Oh, okay.
I
Yeah.
will resend it,
Yeah.
okay?
Yeah. I
Just to
just
get
wanted
those
to,
words
yeah,
in.
absolutely sure. Because, okay. So what happened then was how to set it up. And this is why research is really quite people who are going to do research get masses of money and funding. They apply for funding, they apply for money, which is difficult, and things are turned down. I've had propositions sent to me, and would I support them? And they were turned down. So thousands of pounds. So I reckoned if I was going to start applying for funding for this research, you'd get nowhere. So I decided we'd just do it in extra time and all the rest of it. I did get £1,000 from the League of Friends, which helped to fund some focus groups. So you have to make a protocol. Then the idea was to have feedback or measurement outcomes at time points, and they're called T1, T2, T3, and T4. And T1 was the outcome or the questionnaires when you met the person for interview, for assessment. And so at that point, they had MIMOP, which Stephen's going to talk about, HADS, Anxiety and Depression Scale, which Stephen's going to talk about, and we made up our own sleep questionnaire, which had what's called a Likert scale, which is a 5-point scale. So they had three questionnaires at the meeting about would you like to do and the training. So that was time point one. Time point two was giving them the same forms to fill in when they started. Time point three was they gave the same ones when they finished the questionnaire. And time T4 was 3 months after they'd finished training. So we had 115 people who started the course. We had about 200 referrals in 1 year. This is 207 to 208. And the referrals for autogenic training were 200 and something. That's a lot, isn't it? I mean, you don't get that anywhere else. That is a lot of people. And out of the people who were interviewed, I think it was 115 or something like that, started the course. And then a smaller number ended the course, and an even smaller number filled in the questionnaires after 3 months. But we got enough information and enough to, but before we could even start, I thought that we were just going to do a study and an audit. But no, all of a sudden this became, the research and development team came in and said, no, this is a research project. You must get or proper authorization to go ahead from the research, from the ethics, that's right. You had to go to the ethics committee to get permission to set ahead. So this meant, and I hope you're actually sort of actually being exhausted, because I'm exhausted telling you about it. It was exhausting. We had to get our proposition with all this, that, and the other, and all the outcomes of it ready, and go to an ethics committee. And the ethics committee was Camden Ethics Committee, which in actual fact were not the hospital, because the hospital ethics committee had just sat or something. They weren't going to sit for another 6 months. So we sent us to Camden, and I went with Tom Kirby, who was a great help, to sit in this room. And there was a huge, great table, like a U-shaped table, with all these people there. And they weren't that impressed with. I thought, you know, they'd be very impressed with it, because it was really quite a good proposal. It was well done. And they didn't know anything about autogenic training at all, nor were they interested. They were just interested in how we got the ethics right and so on. And then the pièce de résistance was something when they were saying about insomnia. I was just saying, I must have said something about autogenic training and insomnia and chronic illness. And someone said, well, what about Horlicks? I was absolutely floored.
That was a variable, Anne. Horlicks was a variable.
I tried Horlicks in the past and it didn't help at all.
Pia, you don't know what Horlicks is. Oh, Bev, do you?
Oh, Pia, you haven't lived.
It's a malted milk drink, isn't it?
It was marketed in the 40s for good night's sleep.
Yeah, definitely. Know what that was.
So you can see how far we've got. We haven't even started. Anyway, the trial started and we got the results. And the thing about this was they had three people doing, who were the therapists. And the three people delivered exactly the same program. So there we have, absolutely everybody got the same, in inverted commas, treatment. Okay. And also we had numbers. We had 115, and that makes, if any result seem more likely, because we've got so many numbers. So in actual fact, it was a valid piece, and it had some quite positive results. You can see how doing something like that is absolutely complicated and very time consuming. And as new practitioners, one isn't expecting you to start doing that, but to start actually quantifying and qualifying and actually using the outcome tools to have as a source, that when you suddenly find you've got an interest in this or that, you can follow it through, or produce your own piece of audit or research. It doesn't have to be like that. But that is one of the few published pieces of research in a medical journal. There aren't that many, because can you see, you can't compare one thing with another if they're doing different things. And we are, the AS teaches the the Luter method with the offloading exercises. If you don't have the offloading exercises, you can't compare one thing with another. So there we are. And at the hospital, and Stephen will tell you all about this, at the hospital, we have numbers. And we have people we have now. We have Donna, Stephen, Jane, and Nick, yeah. All, as we know, Jane trained from the Font of Wisdom, as did, and Stephen and Donna and Nick also trained at the hospital and did the therapist course. So they are a homologous group of people. And so you're in a position to continue with, you know, looking at this, and Stephen's got some really interesting stuff to tell you about. So I think, does anybody want to say anything at this point? Because that's probably, you've got the ABC of research and audit, and you've got some papers. Does anybody want to say anything about? Patricia, I think you did some work, didn't you? Patricia?
No, I didn't do audits or anything like that.
I thought you did some work with alcohol.
I did. Yeah,
you did.
I didn't sort of see it like that. Yeah, I did. Of course I did. And I used anonymous emails that went all over the place. Yeah, other countries. And yeah, I did get a lot of stuff. I completely forgot.
What did you set out to find?
Well, I was trying to compare a 12-step program for people with addictions. And I had been doing some research on that anyway for myself for another reason. And I'd worked with people in recovery. And as I was learning autogenics to teach it, I was seeing similarities between the two things. And I was sort of comparing those. But the stuff that I sent around to lots of people, and then asked them if they could forward it to other people. It was more about would those people who were in recovery would be interested in something that could possibly assist them in not relapsing.
Was that AT?
Yeah, I felt that AT would help people not, because the reason I was finding out why they thought they'd relapsed. And a lot of it was anger, anxieties, that kind of thing. And they'd start using alcohol or drugs again. And I felt that maybe the relaxation and the offloading exercises would help those people. And I got lots of people agreeing that they thought, yes, it could help them. And they would be very interested in learning AT.
And did they come and do the course?
No, they didn't, because I didn't know who they were.
Oh,
it was all anonymous. I know it was a shame, but it just kind of proved a point that, yes, there is possibly a need out there for it. A need, I suppose you could call it. You know, that it was something that, because people don't want to keep on relaxing. I mean, unfortunately, some people keep going backwards and forwards. And, you know, if it seemed they were interested in something that could possibly help them to maintain their sobriety.
And I make a very small point there, Patricia. I was confusing the word relapse with relax.
No, relax.
So that was getting confused. I've sorted it out now. It's fine. But if I was looking puzzled,
and relapse from the recovery.
I know what you mean by both, but I was hearing.
Okay.
Such a shame that you didn't have all those people who would like to have done the course.
Yeah.
I know, it would have been fantastic, because I had them from other countries and that kind of thing, because I sent them out to people and asked them if they could forward it to anyone that they knew who might be interested. So I got the answers, but I didn't have a clue who I was getting the answers from, just how they felt about the possibility of AT helping them.
Well, that's a piece of research, isn't it? Getting the answers. Never mind that the people would like to go into another step and deal with that. As anyway, there we are, guys. I do remember that, Patricia. I think you wrote that up for your essay, didn't you?
Yeah, I did that on the essay. And I mean, they do have now. I think they've got people at places like the Priory who are going in there and doing group AT sessions with some of their patients.
Who works at the Priory? Jenny Ravid works at the Priory. She certainly did AT groups.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think, does anybody want to say anything else? Donna, anything, any Pierre, Bay, Sebastian, anything about thinking about research? Has it sort of got something going in your mind? How you might?
I would love to do some more research on something, but it just listening to you, I'm thinking,
Depends what you want to do. What you want to do. I mean, I think if you have an idea, I mean, bring it out and let's discuss it and think. You don't necessarily have to do what I did. I would never have gone that way if I'd known I had to get ethics and do all of that. But in the end, you know, I've forgotten all that and I'm glad I did it. But to do some research at the hospital, you've got the numbers. You know that you can compare this with that. You can get your colleagues to give you feedback. It isn't, I mean, it's the best place to do it and to keep doing it. So don't give up on that, Donna.
No, we ought to do something, definitely, I think.
Well, if there's something you would like to do, let just sort of think about it and think where it might come from.
I think it's Stephen's turn now, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Jenny.
Because I think just to follow that up.
Yes, okay. Yes.
Did Sebastian have a question, or have you frozen? No, you haven't. You're okay.
I'm all right. No, I was saying that, I mean, it's quite tough to run a research, you know, so, and involves a lot of, you know, other stuff. So anyway, might be a good idea.
It is wonderful. As Anne pointed out, ethics. Trying to get something from the NHS approved by ethics could take years because they only meet every 6 months. And there are different people who sit on the ethics committee every 6 months. So someone might have one idea and then 6 months later, someone will have another idea. So you're chasing your tail. So to get round it, we do an audit. So we don't need to do an ethics, don't have to go through ethics. But I do, just to make sure, all the participants realise that their data is confidential. They cannot be identified by their data. That's quite important. Well done, Anne, for doing a synopsis of research, because, my God, it's a minefield. I did a 3-year course at Sussex University in a degree in psychology. So I did 3 years of research studies. I learned research for 3 years. So that's how complicated it can be. And then when I did my second degree, I did 2 years of research studies and it was all different. So at the Sussex University, I was in the School of Cognitive Science. So we only looked at quantitative research. So that they would only do quantitative. Then when I went over to Brighton University, I was doing social science. So they would only do qualitative.
Mm.
Now, personally, I think they could both meet. But most two indecision, they would not meet at all. Okay. The papers I sent you, I hope you didn't print them out because they're huge. I'm sorry, I should have said, don't print them. What you're looking at. So when you come to look at a research paper, go straight for the abstract. Okay, people, straight for the abstract. My abstract in this offloading is a paragraph. Because I had read so many research projects, I got so tired of abstracts being huge. So mine are always just a paragraph, giving you the actual results so you know what's happened. You get the title, and that's the hypothesis. saying what we're looking at, and then go for the abstract. And then actually in the paper, there's so much information going on in there, but I would go straight to the results. You go straight to the results, and they tell you what the results of the research happened. And lovely, Anne, you mentioned the p-value. This is only in quantitative research. The p-value, a p-value of p 0.001, means that this happened, one in a thousand, this result happened by accident. That 99, all the rest happened because of, let's say, autogenics. You can get a p-value of p 0.01, that's one in a hundred, or you can get a 0.05. Anything higher than 0.05 is not significant. Okay, people? So you've got to look, always look for a value of 0.05. If something's 0.06, it's not significant. So significance mean that actually autogenics did the change. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Right. So we have just done, or I think last year, something on MIMOP. Which is, I've just got to look it up because I can't remember. MIMOP is Measure Your Medical Outcome Profile. There's two papers on that. One by John Hughes's, which is a much shortened version. It's quite interesting. And what it does tell you, that when we gave a MIMOP outcome, now that's validated. So the MIMOP questionnaire is validated. That means it's been tested and proved it actually is measuring what it's meant to measure. That's what validating means. So I can't just make up a questionnaire. It's got to be validated, especially if you want something to be published. Anyway, it's been validated. The lovely thing.
Can I ask you a question at that point? So how is it validated? Who validates it?
I wish you hadn't asked me that one.
Sorry, you can erase that then.
No, it's okay. Normally it goes off to studies, some psychology departments, who then will test it, retest it, and test it again. In fact, I think in the paper, it says who validated this, the MIMOPS. And I think in my paper, I wrote it down who validated. But it's normally the psychology department say, we would like this questionnaire validated. So they would test it and test it and test it to see if they're getting the same answers. And that means it's actually measuring what it says it's measuring. Does that make sense?
Yes. Right.
They're using SPSS to measure, to validate the questionnaire or not?
What did you say then? The
Statistical Package for Social Science, SPSS, has been used very often, you know, to validate psychological, you know, psychometric tests.
So all your figures would go through the statistical analyst of SPSS, which is a computer program that will give you your p-value. Okay. I wish I had learned to use SPSS. I never learned to use it. In fact, when I did my degree, I paid people to show me how to do it. It's very complicated.
What does it do exactly?
It's a mathematical statistical analyst that does all the mathematics for you. There's something called a t-test to see if anything there's a difference. I can do a t-test on paper, so I can work out mathematically on paper, but it's 8 pages long of maths.
Oh,
it's huge. It's huge.
And the interpretation is very complex to analyze the data.
That's right. We're talking statistics here. Let the mathematicians do it. So the mathematicians have given this lovely, lovely computer program. You've put in the data and then it goes ping and all the data comes out. It's like a miracle. But I tell
like
you.
Like all technology, it's a miracle.
It's a miracle. Except for Microsoft 365, which I hate. Anyway, when you do a population, that's who you, how many people you're researching, it's got to be more than 30. Okay, for qualitative, you've got to have more than 30. So the numbers that Anne got for hers was incredible. The one we got for MyMOP was about 118, 100, over 100 people. So we did quite a bit of stuff there. I won't go into great details, but when they did the p-value, it all came out to p 0.001. So the outcome of the MIMOP, and if you want to know what about MIMOP is, just read the beginning of the paper and it will explain what MIMOP does and how it's measured. But that meant the change happened, that 1 in 1,000 was an accident, but the rest, the results happened because of autogenics. So that's why the p-value is so important, especially if you're going to publish. They want a p-value, especially when you do qualitative, quantitative research. So I did my audit, not research, I did an audit on the offloading. Now, very, very interesting, you'll find very, very little information, if any, on offloading exercises. I think we in Sussex University, they had something called Sitelit, and you could put in various questions, and it would come up with all the papers that's actually been used or done for that sort of question. Sitelit came up with none. I couldn't find any research papers on offloading exercising. Also, there's a great debate within the British Autogenic Society about it. Let's not go into detail. But what I used qualitative, okay? The interesting thing when you do numbers out of interest, you look sometimes looking at averages, but averages skew the information and don't give you all the nuances. So the average shoe size in England is size 8.5. But in fact, more people buy size 8. So when you look at average or the mean, it doesn't give you the whole story. But if you use qualitative, you get a story. Very, very difficult to analyze. I use something called grounded theory. And when I looked into it, no one really knows how to do it or how it works. It's quite complicated. It's based in postmodernism and phenomenology. I can't say that word. But so I got 119 people involved in this. And all I asked them to do after they finished doing the offloading, and a week later, if they tried it, write down a few words what it was like to do, or what was the reaction, how do you find out about it. Okay, I'm just going to go look at my statistics now. So from 119 people, 66% found it was positive, 33% were unable to do the exercise for various reasons, 26% of the 33 found it difficult to find places to do it, 8% found it was negative and found it caused anxiety. Okay. So in the paper, don't print it, just open it up. Okay, people, because it's about 29 pages. You'll see 119 reflections of what people wrote about. And then what I do, I'm just going to find where I, you use, I'm just going to try and find, no, I can't. What you do, you narrow it down. You do axle coding, you do three stages of coding. until you eventually get to a final category, which maybe highlights what is happening. And from my questionnaires, the offloading, three categories evolved: release, helpful, insight. So from the 119 narratives that people wrote, the most used words in those 119 were release, helpful, insight. And in my abstract, I gave highlighted three examples. And these are: I found the exercise useful, quite cleansing. I was able to release frustrations without feeling self-conscious. So regard a useful a toolkit. The other one: I found extremely helpful. It gives me permission to express tensions. I think acknowledgement for the need of offloading is very important. The third one: it quickly ended up in a monologue about all sorts of fears. I cried a lot, which felt good. It made me feel clearer about my own feelings. So those are the kind of narratives, and you pull out through three levels of coding, and I came out with release, helpful, insight. So qualitative is normally social science or the social psychology, and quantitative is normally the clinical and mathematical side of psychology. So there's two types. You also get a lot of descriptive data. Descriptive normally is the average figures. So again, now, when you look at the St. Mary's paper, that's going to be published. Don't print it out. It's massive. But it gives you an idea, if you want something to be published, what you have to go through and what you have to write. But in there, they've given us the p-values of the MyMOP questionnaire. Again, start and finish and the ending. But it also gives you some descriptive analysis. So it shows you what the average score was at the beginning of the MyMOP, the beginning of the course, and then the average score when they finished it. So you see there's actually there's a difference. So descriptive research is lovely. It gives you an indication, but if you want to get funding from a council or a borough for research, descriptive is not going to be good enough. You've always got to do something like quantitative to get that p-value. In fact, someone like the NHS will want a p-value. They find that much more interesting and gives them proof. Qualitative, if they have a background in social psychology, then they will appreciate that, because that gives you the lovely narratives of all the different things happening. So those are three papers. Don't print them because they're massive. Have a look through them, but look at the abstract first, then go to the results, and they should be quite clear. And then if you want to do a little bit more understanding about, you can then go from, there's different headings on this. So in the St. Mary's one, you've got the methods, results, discussion, and conclusion. You've also got why they did the, why they're looking at this research paper. So it's quite big, but abstract, research, and then maybe the discussion on a research paper, because the discussion will say, like I would write, all the things that went wrong, all the things that I could have done better. Okay. I try to keep that within to 2:30. I hope I have. It's 14:29. I think I got it in. Do you have any questions? Because that was rather rushed.
Yes. But I asked a question before Stephen, so I'm going to leave it to Stephen.
You've got another one. Go for it, Bev. Go for it.
Yeah, and Sebastian, do you have a question first? No. So, yeah, it's fascinating to hear you both talk about research and the projects that you've done, particularly within the parameters of working in the hospital. And I'm curious about how I could do an audit or research, given that I'm just going to be practicing privately. Obviously, I don't know how my practice would develop in the future. I have used with my first client a variation of MIMOP, which is the MICOR form. And it just, because I wasn't in a medical setting, i.e. a hospital, it felt more appropriate, the kind of questions, because we weren't necessarily dealing with symptoms. So, yeah, that's my question, kind of how would I approach it if I wanted to do an audit or research?
You've done brilliantly well, already.
Yeah. I think, David, you're probably looking at the N number, which is the numbers. You can do a piece of research with number one.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to have 100.
Yeah.
There are particular parameters to doing. So one person receives a thing and you have an outcome and that is sufficient, and another person doesn't have it. So the numbers, I think you're probably talking about the numbers you will have, because to start with, your numbers will be low. But as you go on, you can build them up, providing you've got the same outcome. You've got the outcome information there for you. What do you think, Stephen?
Yeah, I quite agree. You started off by doing the different type of MIMOP. I forgot what you said it was. By just getting one person to each individual you treat or work with, for them to fill it at the beginning and fill it up at the end, let them know it's confidential, so there's no names on the paper. It's got to be confidential. And you're just starting to build up numbers.
Yeah.
And when you've got a few, you can find the average number. So the average score at the beginning and the average score at the end. And I'll tell you now, it will be very good. It will drop by two. So you might score four to start off with. They'll always finish about two or three. So it will always be quite good. So that's how you do it. Yes. That's how you do it. Well done.
I'd like to add something to that, because we've talked about research and audit of people who've worked at the hospital, and therefore we're actually talking about people who've had this exactly the same training. But actually think about the therapists. One of the things we thought about when we were starting was the therapist going to make a difference? And in actual fact, all the results that we've had from everybody have been pretty much the same. So the therapist, this is therapist separate. It's the method. It's the method, the consistent method. As long as the therapist delivers the consistent method, then that's comparable. And you have this, you have exact, I mean, the St. Mary's thing have the same results that we've had. The same results come over and over again, irrespective of the therapist. That's what we found.
That's so
really rich and very heartening, isn't it?
Because I think when we did it, there was about five of us doing it, of whatever, but five different characters. Five different characters and how we would present. But we're all teaching the same, remember, but how we present it is so different. And they all got the same results.
And we had three. We had three, and it was exactly the same. Yeah. Amazing. But the other thing that is special to all this work we've been talking about, which has been done at the hospital, this has been done in an NHS hospital. It has not been done as a private client, and so that is a particular thing. That you could put into the mix there, that this is done in a constant environment, a constant room, a constant place, a constant participants, because, you know, there's nobody selected and so on. So it has that extra bit that this is done within an NHS setting, which makes it quite special. But so I think Bev and Pia, and just start. And Donna, just have a go. Think up something. Come up with something. Look at how you might do it and what you want to do with it. Yeah. It makes working more meaning, a little bit more meaningful. Mm-hmm. And who knows what will come of it.
Pia, and Donna, we are doing. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. The other two. Did you have any questions out of the three?
Do you know all the people that started the autogenic training? Did they finish it? I asked that for this reason, because I've worked doing counselling as well in agencies where they get it for free, and I've worked where people pay for their therapy, and it seems to me that the people often who don't pay don't value it as much, and where I feel that the people who are paying, they're investing in themselves and they do care and they will finish, they'll go to the end. So was there any sort of, did you see anything like that with the free treatment in the hospital?
Funny, just out of interest, I taught this at the hospital. I also taught it in mental health in Brighton, and it was so interesting. Could I see any pattern about dropout, or people who said they were going to do the course didn't turn up? People who dropped out after the first session, third session, or didn't turn up for the last session. There was no pattern to it at all. It was randomized. And as Jane Ann will say, and Donna, sometimes now we overbook the courses by at least five or six people. And then only half will turn up. And then one day all 15 people will turn up and you're stuck in the room like this. And no one drops out.
Yeah.
But there's no pattern, Patricia, no pattern.
Okay.
But you're quite right. If you are paying, they tend to, especially if you make them pay in advance, the whole lot.
Well, we could do that or not do that. But I'm going to just throw in another bit, because actually, for the people who kind of really get it, and then it's offered for free, and they realise this astonishing method is here at the hospital. They truly value it.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree.
So that's another mix to the pattern, which doesn't exist.
As in general practice, I did it, and it was really appreciated, as well you know, Stephen.
Mm. Absolutely. Mm. I'm just going to give you some more figures, actually, on my offloading. So out of 119 people who did all the courses, I didn't keep track of who dropped out or whatever, but I did keep track of, out of 119 people who I gave a bit of paper at the end saying, tell me what happened in the loosening up and noise, only 47 people brought their bits of paper back with information on it. When I asked them to bring their paper back for the anxiety exercise, only 24 people out of 118. For the anger, 26, and the crying, 22. So you can send out, let's say, a questionnaire to 200 people. If you get a third back, you are doing very, very well. So this is another complication when you do audits and research. It is very complicated, but it can be fun. And one other thing, there's nothing, if you don't get the result you wanted, that's still good. So there's no rights or wrongs with research. Whatever happens gives you something to investigate. So if autogenics didn't turn out to be so good, you could find out why not.
So
research is good. Whether the results are what you wanted or whether the results you not wanted, it's always good.
Found something out. Yeah.
Is there anything in the John Hughes paper that we've had very recently, Stephen? Because I still can't get my head around the P thing.
The P thing?
Mm.
The P's very difficult. I don't have P in my research. Donna, did you put my research in the latest newsletter?
I haven't seen. Well, I probably could add it. Ruth took over the newsletter. Did you send it to Ruth at all?
No, I sent it to you because I didn't know where to send it to. Sorry.
That's okay.
Being overworked. Poor Donna and Jane.
I'll put it on a list, Stephen. Look, here I go. Starting a new list.
You've got it. It's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So are you suggesting putting the whole paper in there, Stephen?
Oh, wow, that's quite true. It's 26 pages. But it says it's email, isn't it? So you don't have to download. They don't print it.
Well, no, but I think that needs talking about, or whether we're going to select the abstract and the bits that you're thinking of.
I can do. out of interest, here we go again about research. Qualitative doesn't, it gives you maybe something to test quantitatively by. So now I could maybe use figures. So the qualitative audit on offloading, release helpful insight, could then maybe be tested as a hypothesis. Does it actually, do the offloading actually do this? And you could use then quantitative, use an analytic scale or something like that, and then maybe get a p-value, which will prove that their offloading actually does this. Does that make sense? So qualitative can give you a hypothesis to be tested by quantitative. Research can be very confusing, can't it?
Because if you actually think about, I think that the bit that you, that what you did with the offloading was really brave, and it's something that nobody else would have would have done. But actually, the thing, I think, listening to it, you think, would these people have done an offloading exercise if they hadn't been doing their AT, which brought them to the point of having the confidence, the need, the insight, the understanding that something needs to be done. So there is, that's the aspect. You couldn't have given just someone off the street some offloading exercises.
It gets worse, doesn't it? It just gets worse.
It gets more and more. There are layers and layers and layers. And the group and the confidence, the changes that are happening anyway with the autogenic process, the insight, the understanding and all of that. So that's all of that, but we'll leave that, another day.
One more thing about ethics. Ethics is there to protect the participants, to protect the patient, to protect the client. That's why ethics are so important. Years and years ago, they didn't have ethics. And there's a lovely experiment called the Milgram experiment. Do Google it. I'm quite sure it'll come up on Facebook or something like that. The Milgram experiment. You cannot do that experiment nowadays. You cannot do it. It's electric shock experiments. You just cannot do it. But it's a very, very interesting very interesting experiment. Milgram.
M-I-L-gram?
Yeah, Milgram, yes, literally. Yeah. M-I-L-gram.
Yeah.
Okay. Very interesting.
In the midst of all this, we've got the HADS, or the Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale, which is numerical. That is a good, easy number, and you've done some bar charts on that, Stephen.
Yeah.
So that was one, the MIMOP. And then there's another one called Psycho something or other. What's that one?
Cyclops,
yes. They give the MIMOP, the HADS gives only numerical. The MIMOP gives quantitative and qualitative. And the Cyclops gives quantitative and qualitative and time. So there's a mixture of three. And then the other thing, I think, do think about making your own, apart from the valid outcome things like HADS and MIMOP, you could make your own something that you want to find out. Something that you want. And so you make a questionnaire and you stick to it with your client. So you have the validating ones, but you have yours as well, which might give some really interesting stuff that you want to find out about.
Yeah. In fact, in the St. Mary's and the John Hughes's papers, they've used the PSS score, which is a perceived stress scale, which is quite interesting. Again, from the beginning of the course to the end, they got a p-value of 0.001. So stress was reduced by a significant amount. So it's really good. I think, should we finish now? Because I think you might die if you do any more about research.
I'm going to say that was the most brilliant double act that I have ever witnessed in the BAS. And I want to thank Anne and Stephen. It's absolutely superb because it's at a level certainly that I could follow. And as, if I could follow it, you got it, you know, what shall we say? Oh, I shouldn't say this, should I? But I'm not a research person, so I'm beginning to get my head around things on that. Research and you just made things very clear.
Thank you. Research can seem quite difficult and complicated. Mm. It doesn't have to be. Mm. It doesn't have to be. Mm. Okay. Thank you. It's lovely meeting you three, four. I'm pretty sure I met before. Good luck. Enjoy. It's a great technique. I've loved teaching it for about 15 years. I love it. I'm going to sign out now. I've got an elderly mother who wants a cup of tea in Richmond Park.
Well, I wish we could come and join you. But thank you.
Goodbye. Bye. God bless everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.